Ladies and gentlemen, members of the 29th World Science Fiction Convention should like at this time to present you the Toastmaster for the Hugo Awards Banquet, Bob Silverberg.
Welcome, welcome all of you to the awards banquet of the 29th or whatever World Science Fiction Convention, the NorrisCon, or the Satiricon, as I've heard some of you calling it, held here in the Boston Sheraton, better known as the Tower of Grass. It's a great pleasure for me to be up here once again. It's now 3 years since the last time I presided over one of these affairs. In 1968, I had the rather somber pleasure of officiating at the longest banquet in the history of science fiction conventions at the BayCon. It ran something like 5 days. I figured that it wasn't my fault, but things did get out of hand. I figure that I do owe you some time back from the BayCon, and therefore we'll proceed now to award the Hugos, and then we can get along to partying. In the first category, best typeface. Should I save them, Tony? Give them out to the people who deserve them. How many of you were at the BayCon anyway? Let's see some hands. You remember all the troubles we had that night? It was 97 degrees outside the hotel, 137 in the halls of the Claremont. We had a Gothic, Baroque, Romanesque room in which to... There were these pillars. The people at that table and that table could see the dais. The people at that table could hear. The rest of you were out in a vague haze of purple smoke. And now and then I would call for a round of applause just so I could be sure you were still there. Many of you weren't. That was 3 years ago. 3 years of great changes. Some of us now have more hair, and some have less, and some have both more and less. Things happen very quickly in the science fiction world, and 3 years is really several eons. This is a microcosm in which you can become a grand old man at 35, a dirty old man at 40, and in fandom you can become an elder god at 23, apparently. The new generations tumble one past the other as quickly as possible. The critics are quick to acclaim a new Brunner, a new Silverberg. I hope those terms are meant more fondly than the new Nixon we're always hearing about. Anyway, I'm back up here tonight. The lights are brighter, the air is clearer, the world is stranger, and we're going to have ourselves a banquet, a short one, a crisp one. Won't be anything like that other one. That was a weird convention, that BayCon, wasn't it? This isn't a weird convention. This is a slick convention. That's a whole different concept. Up here on the dais with me are a bunch of people whose names you're probably wondering about. Some of them helped to make this convention what it is. Some of them tried their damnedest to keep it from becoming what it is. In any case, I will identify them to you. I ask you not to applaud individual names because that would be invidious, and Isaac in particular would be very unhappy. But let me tell you briefly who we have here. At the end, we have Mario Bosniak, the mad Yugoslavian, our TAF delegate. Next to him, Stu Brownstein, the chief of pigs. Amy Brownstein, who is a lady related to him by marriage. Stand up. Okay, let's stand up. Mario, on your feet. You can remain standing as long as you're capable. Harry Warner Jr., our fan guest of honor. No applause. Please, no applause. The fact that these people are guests of honor is irrelevant. Clifford D. Simak, our pro guest of honor. Robin Asimov. Isaac Asimov, the sensuous Dr. A. On my right, we have Barbara Silverberg. Tony Lewis. Sue Ford Lewis. Bob Shaw of Northern Ireland and points. Linda Desmond. And Bill Desmond.
Shall we applaud now?
Well, I told you not to applaud and you did it anyway, so now you can't. We have a bunch of other names to call off. They are less distinguished, I suppose, than that of the good doctor here. But they are very important cogs in this immense wheel, and it is a matter of credit where credit is due. Since there are 283 of these people, I really hope you won't applaud for each one this time. But I am going to call them off, and I'd like each one to stand up, and we'll give them a good round afterwards. These are the other committee members who have helped in the Norris Con. Karen Blank and Selena Lovett of the registration desk. Jean Berman of the discussion group business. I don't believe she's here. Marcia Elkin and Bijo Trimble of the art show. Are all you folks standing up as your names are called? Many of them are in distant realms. Bob Wiener, who ran the kinetic catalog. Dick Harder of the alien environment room. Jack Chalker and Ed Wood, the auctioneers. We're going to auction them later, folks. Tom Whitmore, Brian Burley, Dave Anderson, Paul Galvin, Morris Keeson, Leslie Turek, Phil Jacobs, Ann Burrells, Kurt Lanza, Elaine and Craig Franklin, Al and Linda Kent. Now, all of these people whose names are probably unfamiliar to 93% of you were out there sweating since 1947 to put the Norris Con together, and let us give them their moment of glory now. I think also, while we're handing out the eager boo now, we ought to give some attention to this tremendous hotel, this astonishing place. Let's hear it for the Sheraton. Now, we've got a lot of other people here that I'm not going to introduce because there are too many of them and I can't pronounce their names. But it is, I think, significant that we have such a marvelous international representation here. Last year the convention was in Germany, and of course we had people from all over Europe coming to it. But here we are in the remote old United States, and we have a sprinkling of Belgians and French and Japanese and delegates from the Afghanistani Science Fiction League and the usual number of Britishers and Poles, and we have Mario and Ara the mad Spaniard. It's a marvelous thing to see all of these people flocking in from overseas. Australians? You may wonder why I left the Australians out. Last night, down at the pool, I found myself in the Australian party, and they gave me something called Australian beer. With either a walrus or a wombat on the can, I don't know which it was. But it blotted out my mind. In case you're wondering, incidentally, why I've chosen to conduct the banquet in Romanian. John Brunner last year did such a good job running it in German that I thought I would top him by studying an even stranger foreign language. And I see that all of you must have been studying Romanian too, and my hat is off to you. I understand that Cliff Simak will deliver his speech tonight in Portuguese, and Harry Warner is planning to speak in Pushto. Did you all enjoy your dinner tonight? How many of you had scrod? Uh-huh. Now, I'm not going to make the usual and obvious joke about scrod. The pluperfect business, which is the first thing you hear when you land in Boston. As a matter of fact, those of you who think you had scrod tonight did not, in fact, eat scrod. What you had was swordfish. As originally announced some months ago, before the Mercury scare, it happens that Tony, acting on behalf of the hotel, bought up a really big lot of swordfish, very cheap, and kept it on ice since last December. Sold it to the hotel commissary under the guise of scrod at a whopping profit. But I'm happy to say that the profit from the sale of this scrod will entirely be donated to the Clarion Science Fiction Writers Workshop. For the benefit of those of you who are attending their first Worldcon, that's a very complicated inside joke, and ask the fellow sitting next to you about it later on. Now, we have a number of responsibilities at the banquet tonight, and not all of them are fun and games, in fact. During the year past, a number of very important members of our little world have left us, and as customary, we want to mention the names of at least a few, because there was a necrology in the program booklet, and you all, I suppose, have seen the names of the departed. Three of them were quite important. Virgil Finlay, the great artist. August Derleth, no applause, please. August Derleth, the Lovecraftian, the founder of Arkham House, and John Campbell of Analog, all left us during this year. Now, I will not call for the customary moment of silence, because since John Campbell is involved in this, I can't think of anything more alien to the spirit of John Campbell than a moment of silence. There was a man who loved talk and who would really, really resent the squelching of talk in sentiment and mourning. Instead, I want to call Lester Del Rey up here to I'd like Lester to speak for a few minutes about John Campbell and to give us the first fandom award for this year's convention. Lester?
It's not a moment of joy. It's not a moment of real sadness either, let me assure you.
We are dealing with a man who more completely lived the life he chose for himself than almost any other man I can think of. That is why it is not a moment of sadness. It wasn't for him. It is for us. We've lost a great deal. But we also have gained a great deal. I have only one regret of any great size to bring to you tonight. I have a number of good things to say. John decided to do something that at the time was totally and absolutely impossible. No man could live off science fiction when he decided to, in the dim, dark days of 1928, 29, and 30, when a story paid a quarter of a cent a word, sometimes 5 years after the ending of the suit. And that's not a joke either. That was true then. Nevertheless, he decided to live off science fiction. He struggled for a few years, and in struggling, he made some innovations. Some of you may have forgotten that John Campbell was the first permanent science columnist of a science fiction magazine. Until he became editor for 18 months, as I remember it, every issue of Astounding Stories at the time ran one of John's science articles. This was pioneering. He took the hard science space opera so far that really to discuss it further is ridiculous, because at the end of the first set of Arcot, Wade, and Maury's stories, the entire universe was subject to any change that the three heroes wanted to make in it. At any volition of theirs, they could create and destroy at will. And it was done on the basis of what was at the time considered a science. This was hard thinking. At the time when those were coming out in the magazines, John was already working on an entirely separate career as Don Stewart. One man's work had already been accomplished. 2 years had passed, 3, maybe 4 years had passed, and John Campbell decided that that wasn't enough, and he began another man's work as Don A. Stewart. That is still with us in all our anthologies. From 1930, until really 1937, although the last story was written a little later to fill a deadline that he had to make when somebody disappointed him in bringing in a lead story for Unknown. During less than 10 years, he established two separate careers as a writer and began a career as an absolutely amazing editor. As an editor, he did something as impossible as the idea of living off science fiction. He made it possible for a great many of the rest of us to live off science fiction, because he brought to science fiction an attitude and an insight which refused to leave it forever in a ghetto. And through what he could teach and show and inspire from writers and from readers, it became a literature that more than the displaced social person of the time, which most of us as fans were, could appreciate and would buy. And if you'll remember the early dim days when books were brought out for the first time, when we began to see more than very small specialty houses publishing science fiction, the books were such things as Slam, from the pages of Astounding Science Fiction. For the first 4 or 5 years, most of the books, almost all of them in fact, were either stories that had appeared in Astounding Science Fiction or had been meant for Astounding Science Fiction. This is how we got into the bookstores. This is what led us into the paperbacks. This is what made the 1939 World Science Fiction Convention, consisting of very few fans, into what we are seeing tonight. And this is what gave us, in a period of what seems to be falling outlets, less magazines before, actually, the largest outlet for science fiction we have ever seen. John Campbell made the field. Let me put it this way. If any other single person, with the possible exception of Hugo Gernsback, who did it by accident to some extent, if any other man were taken away from science fiction, it would be hurt a little bit, perhaps. Doc Smith, yes, we would have lost space opera, but there were others beginning toward that. If Heinlein were withdrawn, it would be a big gap in our ranks. If Asimov were gone, I'm going to avoid the obvious thing, a little of our roof would be missing. There would be a number of gaps, but it would still be essentially the same. Remove John W. Campbell, and you would find that science fiction died as a small and insignificant pulp field sometime during the period of the great paper shortages and the following loss of the pulp magazines. It died mourned by a handful of advocates. That would have been its fate. One man and one man alone managed to save us from the death of every other category of pulp fiction, because he wouldn't accept us as a category. I think that it is a very strange thing, and this is the only thing I am really bitter about. I think it is a very strange thing that a few days ago, when I looked on the bookstands, there was not one single volume available of John W. Campbell or Don A. Stewart stories. I think our publishers and our editors had better do just a little thinking. True, those stories were published in hard covers at the very beginning of publication. Most of them were, not all of them. There were some that never did get such publication, and they were just as worthy as others. All of the Edward Elmer Smith stories are available, and I'm glad of that. I assure you that the early John Campbell stories were just as exciting. They are not in publication because they were seized so too quickly by some of the specialty publishers. Then the hardcover publishers would not touch them because they'd already come out in small editions. And then, because they had sold very small amounts, as is necessary with those small specialty editions, apparently they were overlooked by most of the paperback houses. There have been a couple of paperback editions. I understand there's one more coming out. But if we want to give John the one tribute that would be meaningful to him, I think it is that we should at least read again what he helped to teach us. I would like to see a little pressure for the republication of those stories, because I know that an awful lot of people would like them, and readers who have not read them would have a hell of a good time. The Don Stewart stories were the new wave of their day, and the John Campbell stories were the peak of the old ways of their day. And only once did the twain ever really meet, and that was in his works. Now, First Fandom, an organization which was known and appreciated by John, who in his heart necessarily had to be a First fan, could quite a while before his death voted to give him the award tonight. I consider myself very privileged to give it. And even though it is posthumously given, I don't think John would have felt that this many people having a good time was any loss to anything, because he enjoyed people having a good time. I am also fortunate in the fact that a very dearly beloved daughter of John's, one beloved as I know, perhaps even better than she knows, is here to receive it. This will be given after I read the brief inscription on it. First Fandom presents this, as I know, after a great deal of very serious discussion, with a great deal of admiration and genuine love for the man to whom it was originally meant to be given. First Fandom Hall of Fame Award presented to John W. Campbell, 29th World Science Fiction Convention, Boston, Massachusetts, September 91. The dedication is, through his writing and his superb editorship, he was instrumental in raising the level of science fiction from gimmickry and space adventure to an adult and enduring literature. Felinda Campbell. All right. Felinda Campbell Hammond. This is a proud moment for me.
Thank you. My father lived for science fiction. And all I can say, were he only here to receive this. Thank you.
I've been asked to announce the establishment of the John W. Campbell Memorial Fund at MIT for sponsorship of basic scientific research. G. Harry Stein, who some of you may know from the pages of Analog, is the head of this fund. Contributions to it are tax deductible, and the address, I'm told, will be in the next issue of Locus. This, I think, would be the most tangible way of remembering this great man who has gone from us, even more tangible, perhaps, than subscribing to Analog. And the fund will welcome contributions from those of you whose lives were shaped and transformed by the work of John Campbell. I had a few snappy John Campbell jokes to tell at this banquet, because I always would tell a few John Campbell jokes. John was a big target, and a good target, and a great sport. But let's not tell him. It's too bad he's not here to hear him. We have a lot of other stuff to do tonight. Most of it more cheerful in... Excuse me. I have here a special announcement from convention chairman, Dr. Lewis. The income from the sale of all possessions taken from your rooms during the banquet will be donated to the Clarion Science Fiction Writers Conference.